Hello and welcome to the Unbundled Attorney Mastermind Podcast. My name is Dave Ahrens and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Unbundled Attorney. In this podcast, we interview many of our provider attorneys, as well as some of the leading experts in the industry to isolate the best practices for building internet-generated leads and how to ethically and effectively offer unbundled legal services and other more affordable options in your practice. For more information about our services, visit www.unbundledattorney.com. All right. This is going to be an excellent episode with Tara Lee, who's one of our long-term provider attorneys at a San Bernardino in Riverside. And he has a background in sales, as I do. And so as two salespeople will, when brought forth into a conversation together, start talking about the fundamentals of sales, communication, and how to properly convey the benefits and values of what it is that you offer. And that's really what we focus the core of this conversation on. We talked a lot about the new way in which he takes a deposit over the phone, where he actually doesn't run that deposit only if they don't show up, and how that's affected the communication and the way the client feels and relates to him on that initial consultation. And so we really just spend a solid hour here just focusing on the fundamentals and how to handle the top concerns and objections and best strategies on that for that initial call. Because if you can get them in the office and the folks can come in and meet with you, most attorneys are going to be able to convey what it is you can do to help them, and have a lot of people electing to retain you if you can get them in the office. So the real key is being effective at doing that initial consultation and answering their concerns, conveying trust, conveying rapport, and building that relationship so they can take that first step and come in and meet with you in your office and actually show up. And Tara has really built a great system on how to do that. And we go into depth on it in this call. So I hope you enjoyed the episode, this interview with Tara Lee, again, one of our provider attorneys out of San Bernardino, California. All right, Tara, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, I'm really glad we're getting a chance to jump on. We've been working together for a long time. I didn't even take a close look at it, but it's well over a year now, hasn't it been?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a program and process that's successful. It's worked for my business model, and really, I have no complaints.
Yeah, it's been amazing to see not only how many clients we've been sending you, but how many of them have been getting help through your firm over the time since we've been working together. So maybe a good place to start is give a little bit of background on who you are, how you got your start in the practice of law, and maybe the regions you serve.
Sure. So I've been practicing law now in California for a little over 4 years, which is going to sound surprising considering how young I am in my legal career. I've only been solo for about 2.5 years, and really I couldn't have experienced the growth that I've been able to accomplish without the help of these leads that are generated for my office. I practice primarily family law, and I believe the regions that I cover are both Riverside and San Bernardino. And through the lead generation, I've been able to grow my business from really almost a small office in downtown San Bernardino to a fairly nice office, obviously still in San Bernardino, but it's helped me accomplish goals way ahead of my business plan schedule.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun to work with you, and we've certainly been sending a lot of clients. And so maybe just a brief, you can share a little bit about, roughly how many leads you typically get, and, how many of those folks you tend to be able to reach on the phone, and how many of them tend to come in and pull the trigger. And then what we can do is start, once we kind of have a frame of what you're accomplishing, and we can dive into how it is you've been going about doing that, because from what I've been hearing, things have been going pretty darn good.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't have the exact numbers as far as how many leads I get. I do know that 100% of the leads that come in are contacted almost immediately by a dedicated member of my staff to set up a telephonic conference. I do know just in new revenue generated specifically from Unbundled in just the past 3 months, because I looked that up before this podcast, has been $20,000 plus in just new lead generation from retainers that are retained from Unbundled. And so that's kind of where I've been at, kind of what I've been averaging as far as immediate contact and the way I've converted into retainers.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit before the podcast even started that you've really dialed in. You mentioned almost 100% of the people that the leads that we send you, you're able to get on the phone and get scheduled in to speak with you. Maybe a good place to start, Tara, is to talk a little bit about how that's evolved for you. I mean, initially you were doing all the calls yourself, and then you made some adjustments to try to find that balance of being a solo practitioner and also being able to, you know, respond in real time, which, you know, as we know from all these podcast episodes, for those that have been listening and anyone that fields internet leads, is a really key component of being able to have an effective conversion rate and do well with internet lead generation.
Right. So when I first signed up for Unbundled, one of the things that was told to me is that I need to try and contact these leads immediately if possible, and ideally it should be the attorney contacting them. And some statistics were thrown around about, you know, if you contact them within X amount of minutes, then your probability of turning that into an actual retainer is significantly high. But the longer you wait, those statistics drop down. And so initially, and it didn't matter if it was the weekend or after hours or whatever the case may be, within reason, I was making those calls and trying to get those leads in office. And I found out through trial and error that I made a couple of rookie mistakes. The first one being is that I tended to give away too much information initially. That gave them very little incentive to come in, very little incentive to retain, and I think I almost left them with the impression that they could do it themselves. So that was mistake number one. Mistake number two that I made was basically being the initial point of contact, and the reason why that turned into a mistake is because as my business grew, I had court in the morning and then the appointment set up in the afternoon for new retainers. And so with me being that initial point of contact, that created a situation where I was in conflict between having to make this call or having to take the appointment, while not wanting to lose that time period between when the lead is generated and when I call them to maximize sort of the result at the end. What I found that worked for me to sort of balance these competing interests was that I have a dedicated member of my staff that as soon as the lead comes in, they immediately call them, but it is purely to schedule a telephonic appointment with me. No information, no nothing. We don't get anything other than their contact information really and set up an appointment, ideally the same day that the lead comes in. That appointment is set for approximately 15 minutes, and then I get on the horn with them, and then I try to find a reason for them to come into the office, document review, whatever the case may be, so that I can set up the in-office appointment. At the point where I set up the in-office appointment, what I've been doing is putting a little tweak on the $50 reservation fee, and instead of requesting a $50 reservation fee that I take immediately, I get their credit card information and explain to them that this is a reservation fee, but it will not be run, the $50 will not be run, so long as they make their appointment. Or in the alternative, if they reschedule their appointment, because I understand that they equally live busy lives and things might pop up where they want to reschedule. So by doing that, I feel like everyone starts off on a much better footing. I noticed that when I initially tried to get the $50 up front, there was some reservation there. The feeling of sort of suspicion coming from the end or side of the client was palpable. And so by switching that on its head and only running the $50 if they fail to make the reservation fee, I think equally the clients feel like that's a fair arrangement because everyone understands that attorneys get paid by the hour. But more importantly, we don't start off on the wrong foot before they're even in. And by following that program, I found a fair amount of success working the leads in that fashion.
Can you share, and there's another point I want to circle back here in just a minute, but given that we're on the topic of that $50 fee only charged in the event they don't show up, can you talk about how that has shifted the amount of folks? Because you know, you're serving San Bernardino, Riverside County. I think, you know, from your office, Palm Springs is about 40 minutes or so, 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. Riverside can be about 45 minutes depending on traffic, right? So it's not super far, but it's still a bit of a schlep if there's a lot of traffic. And so can you talk about how taking that card and then having the, I guess now it's only just the cautionary knowledge in the mind of the lead that they're going to get charged only if they don't show up, how that's impacted the amount of people that are actually showing up for those appointments now?
Sure. So previously, before I even started taking the $50 reservation fee, because even though it was advised that I do this initially, I couldn't quite figure out how to get clients on board with that. And so when I wasn't doing any reservation fee, it was really hit or miss. I'd say maybe 1 out of 10 leads would actually show up. And it just sort of over the course of time, that just simply wasn't working. once I started...
Only 1 out of 10 would actually show up, or 1 out of 10 wouldn't show up?
Would show up with any amount of regularity, right? My statistics on that were really low, and I needed a way to sort of adjust that because I was getting the contact, scheduling the appointments. I was still scheduling appointments for almost every lead, but then when it came time to come in, people simply weren't showing up, and they wouldn't respond to our calls when we would call them and say, hey, you have this appointment. Are you going to come in? And there'd be no call, no show. When we were taking the $50 up front, we found that instead of being focused on sort of their issues and actually wanting to retain, it was almost like they're more focused on the fact that I don't want to lose the $50, so I'm going to show up and then leave. And I don't necessarily know if that's true because I'm not in the minds of the client, but that was sort of the impression that I got as far as when I gave my in-office consultation. It seemed more like they were in a hurry to get out than they were to actually receive the legal advice. Interestingly enough, when I switched that around and had clients only paying if they missed their appointment, people were coming in, but they were coming in sort of more open-minded to the concept of retaining an attorney and the fact that because we started out on almost such even footing and being fair as far as the process, that they're more inclined to listen to what I had to say. And as a result, not only are people coming in at a significantly higher rate, but they are more amicable and receptive to the idea of retaining an attorney to provide various services for them. And so I don't know if it's necessarily people in my area, but by switching that around where I only take money if they themselves fail to appear because they're the ones setting up the appointment, they're the ones giving me this particular time, and it's explained to the clients that at this point in time, everyone should know attorneys get paid hourly. And so by me setting this appointment, if you miss it, I've basically missed out on the opportunity to schedule it for someone else. And everyone seems to understand that and is willing to pay that, but now they don't even have to worry about it because they're coming in and they're retaining. And so it's all worked itself out.
Yeah, it's like they can just come in and feel comfortable knowing that's going to be a non-issue because they've already done their part of showing up to the appointment. And people that don't show up, they kind of feel like, okay, well, it's fair. I mean, I didn't show, I didn't no-show, I should get charged because it's on me to make sure, and they understand that, you know, your time is valuable. And if they just blow off the appointment, then they should get dinged for that. But people that do show up, they've already felt like they've done what they need to do, and now they can just sit down and just have an open-ended conversation about the original reason why they wanted to request the help in the first place is how you can help them resolve their legal needs.
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, it's just been my impression that by doing it that way, the comfortability level of my clients when they step into my office has increased dramatically.
Hmm. Yeah, and I can only imagine that the pushback that you would get on a client giving you a card over the phone for and only being charged if they don't come into the appointment versus paying $50 now right on a credit card today in this moment and then getting it back or something if they showed up has a very different it just feels very differently for them and they must respond very differently as well too.
Oh, absolutely. So when I was initially attempting to get the $50 up front, there was a lot of pushback. Why do I have to do this? I think this is a free consultation. And don't get me wrong, I was able to overcome that through explanation and things of that nature. But the pushback and just the overall feeling that I got coming from the client, I didn't feel was conducive to an environment where they trust me and they would then want to give me even more money, to be blunt about it. In the alternative, when we do things in this fashion, in only taking the money if they fail to perform, they feel a lot more comfortable with it. There's no pushback whatsoever that I've experienced in explaining the reservation fee, explaining that it's only run if they fail to make their appointment or fail to reschedule. There's been no pushback. As a matter of fact, because I tried the $50 up front first, I already have my, we call them shots, right? Reasons to overcome objections. So I already have my shots lined up. And so now that I'm doing it this way, I don't even need those shots lined up to overcome objections because almost across the board to a T, what I hear is, oh, no, that makes sense. Here's my card information.
Hmm. Yeah, exactly. And do you – so, yeah, I can only imagine that must have made a big difference. Are there folks that say, you know, hey, I don't have a credit card? And in that case, what is there anything that you've done specifically to get around that?
Yeah, sure.
Or to offer them another option? Do they come in and drop off the payment and then come back? Or how have you worked with that? Because
that must come up sometimes, but
yeah, sure. So basically I give them 24 hours to call in with the valid credit card information or else their appointment's canceled. And then if prior to canceling the appointment, we try to give a follow-up call with the client just to see, hey, maybe they forgot. But generally speaking, they either call in with a card or it winds up being a canceled appointment. But again, just like with anything else, you're not going to have 100% conversion rate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you ever had clients come in and just drop off cash for that appointment, you know, to secure it and then, you know, come back again? It was interesting. You know, Matt shared that. He says, you know, there's clients that sometimes they just plum don't have a credit card either because of, you know, they've got debt or credit issues and so forth, and maybe don't have a bank account this time or whatever. And then they come down into the office and drop off the payment to secure an appointment for later in that week and then come back again. I'm just curious, given that he just shared that on a previous episode, if that's something you've experimented with, and if not, maybe it's something you might want to try.
Oh, absolutely. So we make it very easy for people to pay us.
that's golden rule number one.
Right? So it doesn't matter if it's a credit card, debit card, cash, personal check, whatever the case may be. If you, as a client, feel comfortable coming in, dropping it off, it's open, it's available. People have done that before. We make those options available as part of that contact where we're trying to set up the appointment. So, for instance, just last week there was a client that said, I don't have a credit card or debit card. And we went through the options, the payment in cash, personal check. And what he did was he mailed me a personal check that was post-dated for the date of his appointment. And he came to his appointment. I gave him the check back and everything went swimmingly.
Can you walk through what those – so let's just say I'm the client and I say, you know, that sounds great, but I don't have a debit or credit card. What are the other options that you might run through to try to get around that?
Sure.
Or so, to work with that client and not on that basis.
Right. So what I'd first try and do is narrow down the distance, right? So if he's calling from far away, like we talked about before the podcast started, a fair amount of my clients actually end up coming from the high desert Victorville, Hesperia area. And as a result, they're 45 minutes away approximately from my office. And I'd say something along the lines of, well, if you don't have a debit card or credit card, do you happen to have a checkbook? And they might say yes. And if, assuming they say yes, I'd tell them, well, here's what we can do. Because I feel that you operate in good faith, and I think I want to help you out and operate in good faith as well. So why don't we do this? If you have a checkbook, why don't you just write me a check for $50, post-date it for the date of your appointment. Go ahead and mail that in. That mailing, once I receive it, will confirm your appointment. And then, assuming you come in, I'll simply hand the check back to you. And if you don't come in, I will attempt to deposit it. How does that sound? And generally speaking, that's the way that particular transaction that I mentioned earlier worked. And he said, oh, really? I said, yeah, I like to believe that my clients tell me the truth. So if you tell me this personal check is good and will be good if you don't make your appointment, then I'm willing to believe you. And not only was he surprised at that transaction, but again, I felt that that established a certain amount of goodwill between me and that particular person that segued into him ultimately retaining.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's interesting to see how the nuances of how we deal with just these initial steps in the process can make such a difference in the overall feeling in the client and their reluctance or not in order to take that first step, especially when, you know, it comes back, this is a common theme with internet leads where they haven't had a chance to get to know you, don't have that trust yet. These little adjustments, you know, can make a huge difference in people's comfort level and the rapport that you're able to develop with them right from the get-go. And it sounds like that's making a big difference in the amount of people that are moving forward as a result.
Oh, absolutely. And I think rapport building between you and a potential client is key. And in listening to the concerns, I found common themes that can immediately establish a good rapport with the client. So for instance, if they have a particular issue, being knowledgeable of just some fairly common code sections. So for instance, in family law, best interest of the child, that's family code 3011, plus some other statutes, but demonstrating very briefly your knowledge of that particular subject immediately gets them to perk up. When people are in office, when you start throwing around relevant code sections, they actually start to lean forward in their chair to listen or start taking notes. And once they're taking notes, then you know that they're listening to what you have to say. Equally, by making it easy for them or reassuring them that, you know, you trust them or believe in what it is that they're saying and things of that nature so that they feel comfortable with you. No one wants to call in to someone that they don't know, that they found off the internet, and hear that's wrong, this is wrong. And to be honest, sometimes their position is absolutely patently incorrect, but instead of just shooting that down immediately, okay, well, I hear what you're saying, Mr. So-and-so. Now, in terms of me working with your case and what the law calls for, here's the way that we could address this particular issue. And by sort of changing the scope of that interaction and turning it less into, I'd almost say a sales pitch and more into a conversation for me, and building that rapport and comfortability between myself and the potential client, that has worked wonders. And so if you look at the minor changes that I've made in the way that I consult with people and bring them into the office, it's all sort of designed around creating this ether or atmosphere of comfortability for them so that they can have and gain more trust in me to eventually retain me.
Okay, and maybe this would be a good time, and I'm not sure if you can just switch gears in your head, Tara, and pull this out. Maybe we could do it later in the call. You just tell me what makes sense to you or what seems more comfortable to you. But could we just role play real quick how you would explain to me the next step? So we're going to kind of fast forward in that initial consultation. You've talked to me about my case. I've explained to you what I'm looking to accomplish. Maybe you've asked me a few questions. Can you walk me through from that point and say, okay, well, these are my recommendations on what we'd like to do. If you'd like to go ahead and schedule an appointment, here's how that works. And then just explain to me what you would say to explain the $50 initial fee and how you break that down to them.
Sure. So normally I'd start with saying, okay, so our next step is scheduling an appointment. Now, we do have a $50 reservation fee. Before you freak out, this is the way this works. In order for my office to confirm your appointment, we have to take your credit card information. Note that we do not run the card unless you do not show up. So let me just repeat that. Let me sort of explain that. You're going to give me your credit card information right now. You're going to authorize my office to run your card for $50 in the event that you do not show up. If you show up, I do not run the card. If you decide to retain, it's not like an additional fee above. So if you retain for $1,000, it's not like $1,050. In other words, this reservation fee is purely to hold your place because, as you should know by now, attorneys bill basically by the hour. And so if you miss your appointment, that's basically time that I could have spent doing other things. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay. So can I get your credit card information? And that's how short and quick and dirty it is.
Mm-hmm. I was just making it very clear that this is solely to hold the fee, and as long as they show up, it doesn't get processed. And it's interesting because when you say it's this fee, you're very, very clear at that point. Okay, now don't freak out. Just let me be very clear about what this is about, so they understand that this is not something they're paying for, as long as they just follow through on their appointment.
Correct. And again, with that little blurb right there, that's basically what I've used every single time to secure these appointments, and to a T. The general response is, oh, no, that makes sense. Okay, here's my card.
Okay, cool. And there's one other thing I want to circle back on, but just wanted to – it seems to me that you have a background in sales. I mean, I've worked on the phone for many, many years as well in the legal access plan business in the past. And so and especially because you mentioned shots. Can you talk about what the shots sheet is and how you would use it? I mean, now that you have this – you've adjusted your plan. Maybe you don't need to use the shot sheet or what you would call, questions and answers guide. But can you talk about the importance of a shot sheet, using a script, and how you incorporate these things into your overall process so that you're being consistent in the way you're fielding each individual lead?
Sure. So just by way of background, I used to sell cars.
Okay.
And you learn very quickly when you're on a car lot that people don't like car salesmen. And so you have to have built in not only sort of a thick skin, but ways to overcome objections. And those sort of quick one-liners are called shots. And initially, if you're smart about it, you sort of write down, or if you do flashcards or whatever the case may be. But the point is you have this information readily available to you, so that you can work with it constantly and consistently, because the value of the shot isn't necessarily the shot in and of itself, isn't the verbatim text on how you address this issue, but it's sort of the confidence in which you convey the message that really resonates with the client. In other words, if you're just sort of reading off a script, it's dead. There's no emotion. There's no empathy that the client can feel on your behalf. And it's just words, you know, floating out in space. Alternatively, as you work with this sheet more and more, it becomes natural and you internalize this information so that you can then start speaking conversationally, colloquially with the client. And these are just part of your presentation. And that's when you start getting the genuine results. And so, for instance, on the $50, one specific objection that typically popped up time and time again was, well, I thought it was a free consult. Why do I have to pay $50 now? All right. Mm-hmm. And the explanation would be, well, Mr. So-and-so, granted, it is a free consultation. However, you know as well as I know that time is money. Your time is money. My time is money. And so all this is a reservation fee to hold your space. If you show up to your appointment, we immediately refund it that same day. So all you have to do is put basically a deposit, and when you show up, that deposit is returned to you immediately. And by doing it that way, that was one way in which you could overcome that one particular objection. Now, not everyone's going to be sold on that. And depending on what they say after that, you have to then go to your next round of shots. But that's a specific objection and a specific way to explain it, such as it's a deposit that you get back immediately when you show up. And by doing that sort of, or having this sort of framework that you have set up for yourself, I have an objection that I'm encountering all the time. How do I overcome it? And then you have, you know, deposit for that objection. Or another one is just sort of using real world examples. So, for instance, your time is money, my time is money. That establishes that both of you are on the same playing field. In other words, you respect his time just the same way that he should respect your time. And by engaging in that sort of mutual exchange, that equally sets up the shot. And so once you start working with this and have a script to sort of work off of, it's not the script in and of itself, in my personal opinion. It's the internalization of the information into the person conveying it and then being able to mm-hmm. then say it effortlessly. That really helps. But obviously starting point one is have a script, know what it is you're supposed to say, work with it over and over and over again. You're going to stumble, you're going to fall, you're going to miss retainers in this particular instance because you're not comfortable with that information or comfortable putting forth that persona. But once it clicks, then it's just streamlined. It's really a beautiful thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I really hear what you're saying as far as once the script becomes a part of you. Do you still have those shots and those scripts in front of you? I remember for years I always had it there anyway, but or do you have it to the point where it's kind of like Bruce Lee eventually had the fundamentals down so well that he could kind of have the intercepting fist and just kind of flow with it, which is good too. I mean, it's not a very long call, so it's not like a very long sales process, this initial 15 to 30 minutes. But do you still use scripting, or how did that evolve for you? Did you start with the initial script we gave you and then evolve that yourself, or how has that process been for you over the last year or two since we've been working together?
Sure. So I've had the initial script, and I looked at that and sort of tweaked it to my own specifications. And I still look over my script from time to time, not necessarily because I'm encountering the same objections, because I've come up with a different way to handle the issue, but just in case. And I think that's the key, is that I rehearse these things that I attempt to say in front of the mirror. I rehearse and role play even with members of my family and things of that nature to keep the information fresh. Because another issue is that when you're saying, if you're doing it right, it's almost like you're saying the same thing over and over and over again, regardless of who the person is, right? And especially in family law, there are really only so many issues you can address. I mean, hot topic issue, custody and visitation, hot topic issue, allegations of domestic violence. The financial stuff is all fairly straightforward, right? We're dividing things according to the law, et cetera, et cetera. But there's only so many times you can say things so many different ways before that information becomes stale, even for yourself. And if you're not enthusiastic about the information, and I'm not saying be, you know, a fanboy of family law or anything like that, but you have to have a certain level of acumen and enthusiasm in conveying this information so that they see that you actually love what you do, and that conveys a message to them that, hey, I want to hire this guy because he actually likes what he's doing, right? And so while I don't generally have the script up anymore as I'm talking to clients, I do refresh my recollection almost weekly Just looking back over, I do update it. So if I come across a new objection, which I haven't recently, because again, I have this process that's been working fairly well for me with little to no objection. But I used to update it with if someone came across something and I was just stumped, I'm like, yeah, I need to overcome that eventually. And like I said, I do rehearse and role play to keep the information fresh so I don't sound like a robot and I don't sound like I don't care about the information.
Yeah. It's interesting to look at it from this perspective, you know, given that we both have a background in sales. You know, attorneys, I think, maybe have some resistance to thinking of themselves as salespeople, which, you know, all attorneys selling, the product they're selling is themselves.
Right.
But a lot of people, you know, would resist that idea and say, well, we're professionals and, you know, we're not salespeople and so forth. But looking at it from that perspective really can help you start to realize that what it is that you're doing is a system. The people have a finite number of concerns, a finite number of, you know, issues that are going to prevent them from wanting to move forward. And if you can start to quantify and better understand what that client's going through and what they need to hear at various stages to feel comfortable and take the appropriate action that you're able to then assist them with, you know, going forward, assuming that, you know, your services are a good fit for what they're trying to do, then it really helps them, helps the client, you know, feel comfortable and take those next steps instead of having those, you know, those buffers or concerns that usually is just going to end up with them not taking action in their case or, you know, taking an approach that may not necessarily be in their best interest. So can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, as far as just how you bring the selling, how you maybe you've embraced that aspect of it to help you become more effective with talking to the clients and refining things in the way you have?
Sure. I don't know if you or the people listening have ever watched The Boiler Room. It has Ben Affleck.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have.
It is a great movie as far as sort of tackling this issue. But he has a line in there, Ben Affleck does, where he says, whether they buy today or you hang up the phone, a sale has been made, you know? So whether or not the client retains or they decide to walk out of there without retaining you, someone sold someone. And in that interaction, you have to decide and make up your mind that it's going to be me that's selling myself to these people as opposed to the other way around. Now, there might be some stigma or some idea that, you know, I'm not a salesperson. I'm an attorney and somehow those two are different or separate and apart. But this is my thing, is that there's a reason why we have suits and ties and have our attorney persona. And that's because what we do and what we represent is supposed to mean something. And as a result, when we're conveying this image and ideally this this ideal to our potential clients, to the court, to the world at large, whether or not we acknowledge it, we are selling the idea of an attorney, right? If you weren't concerned mm-hmm. about the idea of an attorney, show up to court in your slippers and you know, aloha shirt, if you will, and see how far that gets you, right? So we are projecting an image, and whether or not we know this is part of equally selling, maintaining, upholding the idea and ideal of what an attorney is. And so the natural extension of that is converting this thing that we already carry around, this idea of what an attorney should be, a way an attorney should conduct themselves, and then translating that into an idea that the clients can grab a hold on, right? And so it's not – I don't view myself as a salesperson. I view myself as someone who's friendly, right? And by being friendly, by being a conversationalist, this enhances my ability to then convert potential clients into actual retainers and actual clients. And so – when it comes down to, you know, am I a salesperson? I don't want to sell myself. We already do it. You already are, whether or not you acknowledge it or you don't. The idea is, are you going to sit blindly, idly by thinking that you don't, or are you going to capitalize on something that's already been given to you? By virtue of your bar card, you're allowed to do things that the average person cannot do. You're allowed to say things that the average person cannot say. And as a result, you need to craft that, hone your craft to the point where you're able to project that, and that is in of itself selling, right? So
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The two don't seem inconsistent to me, I guess, is the shorter version of that.
Yeah, and when you take that approach and strategy and realize that, you know, people are evaluating you based on the limited information that they have, especially this, given that this initial phone consultation, when you first get that lead and they get on the phone with you, is most of a lot of times the first time that they've ever met you. And they don't know who you are. They don't know if you're necessarily, except, you know, based on our reputation as a company, and then of course any reviews they might read from your profile and so forth. There's some social proof there, but you know, ultimately they're trying to answer a question of mine. You know, does this guy care about me? Can I trust him? And is, you know, can I afford him? And can I help him? And these are all the main, you know, dot or check boxes in their mind they have to get checked. And so if you can start to quantify how it is that you can convey in the most concise and confidence building manner, how you can meet those needs, assuming that you, again, you're a fit to work with them. And that, I think that's another commitment, is really listening carefully and saying, can I help this person accomplish this? You know, usually with the leads, they have a genuine legal need. They need to move forward. You usually have an option if you're offering a bundle they can afford. So most of the time, you know, you have a prospect that you can provide a service for. It's not a suspect. But you know, once you can start quantifying those things, then you can give the person a lot, help them feel more comfortable. Help them realize that, yeah, you know, I mean, I am here for your well-being and for your needs. You can trust what it is we're doing. And guess what? It's even at a price or a rate that's, you know, a fraction of what, you know, a lot of the attorneys are going to charge you. And so they really can see the value in that. And the better you can convey that and start to quantify how to communicate that, it's just going to help the clients feel more comfortable. And then, of course, the end result of that is that a lot more of them are going to be, you know, electing to take the next step and eventually retain you for your services. So I really appreciate your perspective on that, because I think, you know, starting to learn how to quantify what those responses are going to look like and refining that over time is, in my mind, the telltale sign of a true professional, not necessarily a sales professional, but someone that really cares about their clients and really takes that, their communication seriously for the sake of their clients.
Right. And just as I think about it, I kind of have this step-by-step approach that I can probably explain fairly well. My step one is be friendly, and that can manifest mm-hmm. itself as an attorney in a bunch of different ways, but I tend to, again, be approachable in the way that I speak and attempt to convey friendliness over the phone. The number two thing I do, because again, these are like 15-minute contacts, is I try to answer one question competently. Right? That establishes trust, that tries to convey the fact that I'm knowledgeable about their issue, but that equally conveys that I'm listening to their problems, and already in a span of 5 minutes, I can already help you. Number three step is find a reason to come in if a reason exists, right? Mm-hmm. We don't force the issue, but for instance, if you have a document, I need to see it. So why don't you come on in and let me see it? If you have pictures, you know, I want to see it, but find a reason to bring them in. And then last, then that transition into the $50 reservation fee. But again, by switching it, we only run it if you don't show up. That adds a level of responsibility to them that they are then held accountable for. And that kind of completes the process, right? Be friendly, answer one question competently and briefly. You know, find a reason to come in, get the $50. And basically, by following that step-by-step process, my ability to get them in and retain them has shot through the roof.
Absolutely. And is there any specific shot or question or objection that you get, even now that you have the, you know, the $50, you know, just you come in and you only get charged if you don't show up. But is there any other concerns or objections that maybe other attorneys might get that you found particularly a response that is well received amongst the client? I remember, you know, we used to get, I want to talk to my husband or third party quite often, and developed a way to approach that. But you know, maybe that's one of them. Or is there any ones that come to mind where, you know, it's a pretty common one that you found a way to help overcome for the client on that initial call?
Well, normally, if there is an objection, it's like, well, I'm going to think about it, right? Or mm-hmm. I want to yep. talk to someone before this, that, or the other thing, right? And this is basically what I've found useful for me is, let's say I'm on the phone with you and you say, okay, well, that all sounds nice, but before I give you my card information, I kind of want to discuss this with so-and-so. And since we deal in family law, it's generally not their wife. But yeah. I want to talk to so-and-so. And at that point, I say, okay, look, so here's the thing. I understand that you need to speak to people that are important to you to try and help you make this decision. Let me try and make this decision just a little bit easier for you. All right. Tell me some of the questions that you might ask them. Oh, how about this? How about that? Or, I don't know. I would feel more comfortable if I had an opportunity to speak with this person. I said, that's fantastic. All right. How about we do a third party call right now? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally, you've established a level of comfortability where that doesn't seem pushy, right? Because that shot in particular is kind of a double-edged sword, because if you haven't established a good enough rapport, it's almost 100% certain that you're going to lose that person, because now you seem sort of, again, pushy, you know what I mean? But generally speaking, it's a feel thing. Or, you know, I don't know, I'd want to talk to someone right now. Well, how about this? How about we set you up for another telephonic or in an office with that person so that we can get this moving, right? Generally speaking, it falls into a category of answer a question with a question that seems relevant, or in the alternative, try and incorporate whoever it is, because we used to call them third basemen, people who are not the actual person that – so, for instance, just car sales. The person who's actually buying the car is not the third baseman. The person that they have to talk to in order to make that mm-hmm. purchase happen is the third baseman. So we used to call them third baseman, right? And there's two ways to sort of deal with third basemen. The first one that I found most successful is attempt to include them and include them as soon as humanly possible. And just like in car sales, you would make eye contact with that person constantly and consistently, acknowledge their presence and things of that nature. The other one is to try and ignore them and convince the person that they shouldn't listen to their third baseman. And sometimes people need that, but generally speaking, that's not the way to go. So translating right. that into over the phone conversation, I try and present options that will allow them in a timely fashion to not only talk to whoever it is they need to talk to, but also flesh out whether or not that's just an excuse, because I don't want to waste any more of my time if this person isn't serious about retaining my services, right? So if you ask a simple question right. like, well, who do you have to talk to? And they fumble a lot, then that's more of an excuse. And like I said, you're not going to convert 100% of them, but you don't have to waste your time on someone that might be a flake. You know, give them your relevant information, wish them a good day, and if they call back, they call back. But if they have a legitimate right. A response, you know, like I have to talk to my mom because they're going to help me finance this, right? Well, why don't we talk to them? You know, I got time right now. Why don't we talk to them right now? Or why don't we set up an appointment so that, you know, we can do a three-way conversation between myself, yourself, and your mom? And generally speaking, as long as I'm setting TCs, I don't take the $50 reservation, because I can do a 15-minute contact without feeling bad about myself at the end of the day if nothing happens, right? But if I make that option yep. available to involve that person that they need to talk to so that everyone has the same information, not only like, wow, this guy, you know, this guy is really nice. He's willing to talk to even my parents about it, just by way of example. But it's sort of like a necessary risk to take, where you don't take the $50 because they're not coming in office, but you're willing to take that risk, because if you can get the third baseman in sales, everyone knows that if you get the third baseman on board, the sale is basically done for you, because the third baseman goes from being the person objecting the most to the person telling that person, no, you should do this right now.
Yeah, this whole time I just had a massive grin on my face. This is the stuff that, you know, I was, you know, brought up with as well, you know, learning how to be effective on the phone. And especially with the third baseman becoming an influencer, I think what comes to me is I'm going to share what we used to say with third parties, because family law, like you said, is a little different, where it's a lot of times it's the grandma or the parent or someone that's going to be financing the case.
Right.
But sometimes you'll find out, and maybe, you know, correct me if you do a little differently, Tara, sometimes you find out that person is now remarried.
Right.
And then the one party is dealing with a custody issue or a visitation matter for a child with a previous marriage, or you find out through questions and really good questions. And I'm curious if you ask questions to find out, are they in a new relationship? Are they married or something like that, to figure out if there is a third baseman early on in the call?
Well, normally it just naturally arises, right? So, for instance, if they have mm-hmm. a new girlfriend and their divorce is still pending, across the board, generally people will disclose that information fairly early without any prodding. Equally, yep. Especially recently, having someone put their card down for $50 where it's not even being run. And I think now that we've actually talked about it and I've said this out loud, I think part of not having to deal with that issue in particular is because no money's out their pocket. So they don't have to check with anyone or get the funds from anybody else either, right? For all I know, they have zero money in their bank account, but because they can give me a card, they're still allowed to come in. And since they know they're coming in, everyone walks away happy from that transaction. But I guess to answer your question, I don't fish out for if there is a pre-existing third baseman. That just sort of arises. And the funny thing is that in those particular situations where it's like a girlfriend or they remarried or something like that, those third basemen are actually the easiest to convert because they want this done. You know, they don't want their current significant other involved in litigation with another so-and-so about anything, to be honest with you, because that's more time, money, et cetera, out of their current relationship. And so if you can just sort of give them, that person, their due respect and listen to their concerns as well as your client's concerns, and then sort of drop little hints or make little statements, like, for instance, and you know, Mr. So-and-so, that she's going to be extraordinarily happy when we wrap this up, right? And then you look over to the other person, and they're already starting to grin, right? Because even if they're silent the entire time, you have to know that that's something that's weighing on their mind. It's just the inevitable conclusion of, if you're in a pre-existing relationship now and you still have issues with a past relationship, that never goes well with your current significant other. And so, you know, it's fairly easy to get them on board.
Yep. It's really amazing. It's just testament to the power of the fact that you're, you know, that small adjustment and not charging the fee and only charging them when they're coming in, that it's basically a, you know, what do you call a lay down, but there's no resistance there because they know they're not coming out of pocket as long as you're just willing to come in and show up. And so there isn't really that much of a financial decision. Right. But for the sake of attorneys that maybe do want to, you know, enroll someone over the phone. We just had a couple recent podcast episodes where attorneys do, you know, enroll clients for $500, $750, $1,000, where they're making that financial decision. What we found is if we laid out the cards to that client as far as how much it's going to cost and what the fees are, and then got the "I want to talk to third party" response. Mm-hmm. That it was a lot more difficult to get to schedule the three-way call once you've already explained all the costs, because then that person wants to go and explain the costs for them. And then what happens is a lot of times they don't do a very good job of that. And then they do a very good job of that. And then they go hire someone else or don't take action at all because it didn't make sense and they weren't able to convey it very well. So what we used to do is we'd find out if you get a sense for the fact that they have a girlfriend or a boyfriend, a new boyfriend, new girlfriend, or that they're remarried in the questioning or because of the case, they've moved into a new home with their boyfriend or girlfriend. We just ask, okay, great. And before we talk about the services at all and what they cost, we would ask, okay, John, have you spoken to your boyfriend, girlfriend, wife, husband about this, you know, the situation and what you're looking to accomplish here? And they say, yes. Usually you say yes. Okay, and does your boyfriend feel the same way as far as, you know, wanting to help you accomplish, you know, getting custody or getting visitation rights to your boy? And they would say, yeah, no, they're on board, of course. So we'd ask that next question. And then the next question would be, okay, do you think your boyfriend or your husband or wife would want to be involved in any part of our legal game plan or a financial decision regarding this matter? And then they answer that question and they go, yes. No, maybe so. And they said, okay, if they say yes, you know, I think they'd want to be involved in what we're going to do legally or the financial decision, you say, okay, great. Well, then why don't we set up a time that both you and your wife or husband or boyfriend are going to be available, and then I can explain all your legal options to you together, and then you guys can make a decision on what you'd like to do as one unit. Would that work for you? And they go, yes. Okay. Why don't we set up a time? When do you think would be a good time to do that? Do you think John or James would be available right now? And they go, yeah, he's at work, or no, he's not at work. Yeah. I say, well, why don't we just set up a three-way call right now? And then I can kind of go over, you know, what you've shared with me so far, catch him up, and then we can talk, you know, more specifically about what we can do to help you out. Does that sound good? And then initiate the three-way call from there before you even get the objection, because you've already isolated early on in the call that that's something that's going to be an issue. So in other words, we used to handle the "I want to talk to third party" or "third party basement" objection by never getting that objection in the first place, because we try to flesh it out before we talk about the money at all.
What I've done is very similar, like attempt to avoid the objection altogether, but by the way that I handle it isn't necessarily the walk down, right? You ask them a bunch of questions where you've pretty much predetermined what the answers should be. And then once you get your specific set of answers, you know where to depart from that walk down scenario, to simply creating a scenario where they come in. And then at the tail end, if you need anyone there to help you make this decision, make sure they're at an office so that they can have the same information that I'm giving to you. So you're not repeating yourself. I'm not repeating yourself, myself. And, you know, everyone walks away with the same information. And then generally, because I feel like a large portion of my ability to speak with potential clients is more so in person than over the phone. And to be honest with you, it's not just me. It's just people in general. And so by having the relevant people necessary to make that decision in my office, generally I'm able to overcome any sort of objections that arise from that potential third baseman or whatever the case may be. Equally, I try and avoid things like pricing over the phone, and I try to avoid any reason for them to tell me no over the phone. I try to ask really only questions in which I'd get an open-ended response or a response that's purely yes, to get them sort of in the mode of yes. And that way, when I ask something like, okay, so now do you want to schedule your in-office appointment? The answer almost automatically is yes, because of the way I've framed the scope of the conversation.
Yeah, and it's a luxury. Once you use the process you're outlining where they don't have to make a financial commitment up front, then it's ideal for them to have both of these two parties come in and sit down with you, because there isn't a fee to do so. And that way you get a chance to sit down with both of them. That's going to be obviously your best opportunity to handle any concerns that either of those parties may have.
Right.
And so that's, you know, that's, for a long time, we always felt like that was the ideal case scenario for most attorneys. And I think it is to have everything you're doing in the consultation, transitioning them to come and meet with you in the office, because that's what's going to make people feel the most comfortable.
Right.
Is actually to be able to meet you and get to know you and sit down with you and see that you're real and see that suit and tie like we talked about or whatever it is, and see the comfortability of your office. And that's just going to make them feel more comfortable, trust you, and as opposed to over the phone. Yeah, it's interesting though that we do have some other attorneys that are starting to, you know, handle that enrollment over the phone, especially when you have long distances. And so this is where the creativity on having your objection, you know, your shots or your responses, you know, well thought through, starts to impact things a little bit more when people are talking, you know, where you're looking at, you know, having people make payments over the phone without having first met you in person.
Right. So it's funny that earlier, you know, you brought up Bruce Lee and one of his major concepts was being fluid like water, right? And we can all do the accent in our head, but the point is that we never limit our potential to make money. So we don't follow the script so rigorously and so rigidly that if someone wants to throw money at you right now, you tell them, no, you have to come into my office first, right? The point is to make it as easy as possible, again, for people to pay. So if it's long distance, and you can hear that in their voice, you can hear their hesitation in coming to your office. And, you know, saying something like, I can't pay for gas right now, right, generally sends alarm bells to attorneys' heads. Well, like, how are you going to pay for your attorney's fees? But that's almost like prejudging a client, because you don't know what sort of friends, family, you don't know what sort of retirement that they might have access to. You don't know what sort of house they might have to sell that has X amount of equity that you could put a lien on. And so we don't want to prejudge or prequal, right? We don't want to prequalify clients just by virtue of certain information. So we take them as is. And if you hear that hesitation about the trip, then you start sort of asking questions on ways to make it convenient for them. And what you're trying to do is convey it in a manner that makes it seem like you're doing them a favor. So for instance, well, I noticed that drive's a long drive and you have trouble because of your work.
Or maybe they don't have a car,
right,
or something like that. Yeah.
So why don't we try and do it this way then? I've even done some video conferences with GoToMeeting, Skype, and FaceTime to help facilitate that transaction. So no one has to do any driving or anything like that, right? And then we can still do the credit card after the fact and things of that nature. But the point is that I don't go into a consult thinking, okay, because this is in Palm Springs, I'm going to wind up doing a video chat with them or something like that. I just go in with a default set, I'm going to talk to them and sort of feel out where this thing goes. But then I know in my bag of tricks, I have a number of ways to make it very easy for them to feel even more comfortable with me. So for instance, being able to set up a video chat conveys to them that you're tech savvy, whatever that means nowadays. But it conveys to them that they have a method of seeing and talking to their attorney that doesn't involve them driving the hour that it would take if they were to drive, right?
Yes.
By accepting something like a personal check initially, a lot of people are surprised when I do that. I do qualify that statement with, obviously, if it bounces, A, I'm never going to accept another personal check from you ever again, although we know that that's not going to happen. And there's a $35 surcharge fee because my bank charges me a $35 surcharge fee. And everyone seems all right with that. But the fact of accepting a personal check and explaining to them, look, I think you're operating in good faith, so I'm going to accept your personal check. You know, that in and of itself, they're like, wow, really? Allowing them to, again, schedule potentially multiple telephonic conferences just to get the relevant people on board if that distance is too great for everyone to make it, or if because of their schedule they can't have it. That's another thing. One of the things that I hear often from clients is, well, you know, I tried calling this other attorney, but they never called me back. Or I talked with this other attorney, but they didn't want to talk with so-and-so or whatever the case may be. And that's true because, I mean, our time is valuable. Our time is literally money. And as a result, you know, if people don't hear basically dollar signs right off the bat, they're not willing to go. And it's not even really an extra step when you break it up into increments of 15 minutes. It's just what's in the attorney's best interest at that point. If making that additional contact, if becoming familiar with how to FaceTime or Skype or use GoToMeeting, all of these things are things that, you know, attorneys nowadays should be familiar with. And then by demonstrating that you have these tools available to you, that's building confidence in you, because you're not only solving their legal problems, but you're solving their logistical problems as well. And again, it's sort of creating this atmosphere of, hey, Mr. Person that just sent a email through the internet and I'm meeting for the very first time, I really know what I'm doing, but more importantly, I'm solving your problems right now, you know? And it doesn't matter if it's a legal problem or a logistical problem. And people like that. The only reason why they call an attorney or email for an attorney is because they're having problems. And if we can solve as many of those problems with minimal, you know, intrusion into our day-to-day, I'm not saying, you know, solve all of their problems. I'm saying logistically, make it easy for them to talk to you, see you, see your office. Logistically, solve at least one problem that you can do competently and swiftly. And especially in family law, that's generally pretty easy to do. And by doing that, you've already set the groundwork for them being able to trust you. And it's that trust and that rapport that then segues into increased retainers.
And have you found when you do have a little bit of that, geez, that's a long way, or my girlfriend's got the car, I'm not sure if I can make that, or even they don't say that and you just kind of get the sense of like, oh, okay, that's about an hour away, or whatever it is that they kind of hint at that's a little bit further. Have you found that offering the video conference call, so, you know, that would maybe be that next step, would you then book appointment for the video conference call, and do you still take the $50 fee reservation to do that? And if so, has that video conference call actually worked well, where they still have a feeling of comfort, you know, that they get to see you, you have that full length conversation, and has that still been effective to do that, to use that strategy?
I don't take the $50 reservation for the initial video conference because I categorize that kind of as a TC as well, and it gives me a telephonic conference, a TC. It gives me an opportunity to sort of feel out the entire situation as well. But what I do is that in the event that, well, like being fluid, if I get the impression that this video conference will turn into a normal standard consult, which I generally don't like because I like them in office, then I do still attempt to get the credit card. But if it's just a contact so that everyone can sort of meet powwow and then convince them to come into my office, because again, I feel that them being in my office significantly increases my chances, but it also increases the comfortability level of everybody, then I don't. So it's one of these decision things where I make a cash decision. I haven't been right 100% of the time. I've failed to take a $50 reservation fee. And to me at that point, it's moot, right? Because you're talking to them anyway. And the only reason why you would take it is because you're talking to them. And since it's such a minimally invasive contact, a Skype session, whatever you call it, then they generally make those. I haven't had anyone skip out on a video conference. So it's not necessarily something that I stress about. It's something that I do make sort of the decision based on the input that I have. But equally, the whole reason for the reservation fee is just to ensure that they show up. So I try and reserve the asking of that for when they actually come in office.
Well, and it makes sense because, you know, if you don't have the problem of the no-show, the original reason you start taking the reservation in the first place is because only one of the 10 clients are coming in the office. So you know, if you're not, if you don't really have that issue when you're doing these video calls, whenever, you know, the off time there, that becomes necessary, then, you know, the reservation fee doesn't really have a purpose per se, you know, except in the off event, which you said pretty much doesn't even happen, or they don't show up for a video call. So,
right.
And that sounds like it's probably something that's going to be straight away anyway. If they can't come in, it's, you know, they're going to be at their house, you know, the next time you can schedule it. So
exactly.
Okay. Well, hey, you know, I guess the last thing, maybe we could touch really briefly on it because it was some part of our conversation a little earlier, and then we'll just wrap it up because we've spent a lot of time. This has been, you know, really a flashback into, you know, the core beliefs and core strategies of sales and just understanding, you know, your client's comfort zone. So comfort points and how to communicate well and how to make them feel comfortable and trust. And it's been just really enjoyable to kind of re-explore all these original fundamentals. But just the final thing was, you mentioned, we talked, you know, earlier, that one of the things you'd be doing is doing a balance between general retainer and then flat fee services.
Sure.
Could you just do a quick lay down of, you know, those two different options and how you kind of put those, you know, offer those as separate approaches depending on what the client feels most comfortable for, and then we can wrap up from there.
Generally speaking, when people retain from the unbundled leads, it's either for a flat fee retainer of $1,750 or for my general retainer of $2,500. The general retainer, you know, covers the doc prep, the appearances and all that stuff, and it's an hourly billable as opposed to a flat fee. And the $1,750 is a flat fee, but those are reserved for very specific matters that have, generally speaking, very set timelines. And neither of those retainers include trial. So just in case anything goes sideways on us, you know, we can still acquire more money or request a replenishment in the event of trial. On the flat fee side, they're generally reserved for things like domestic violence restraining orders or post-judgment modifications of orders, because there's a finite timeline that those things wrap themselves up on. So, for instance, generally speaking, a post-judgment modification of, say, spousal support is 1 to 2 hearings. And we can do that on a flat fee. We handle all the paperwork. We do the appearances. But we know, generally speaking, when it's concluded. And again, since it doesn't cover trial, if it turns out to be something more than that, then we're insulated by putting in our retainer that it doesn't cover trial. On the general retainer side, what I generally do is, if the person has problem paying, and this goes back to the idea of making it very easy for them to pay, I explain to them that nothing will be filed until half the retainer is paid or $1,250. So I don't care if it's a dollar today or if it's $500. The point is that my office doesn't have to file anything on your behalf until at least half the retainer is in. And then I explain to them that I'm not required to appear at any of your hearings until the remainder of my retainer is paid. So basically, retainer paid in full before the first appearance. And people can get on board with that. Plus, if they're having issues coming up with the money financially, it allows them to be in charge of their own timeline, but know that they have an attorney still doing work in the background and things of that nature.
Well, that's key, right? That, you know, even if they can't do the $1,250 right now, if they have $250 every 2 weeks, then you can start getting, you'll take those initial payments, you know, and put them in trust and start, you know, racking up and get them going in the process, even if they don't have the full amount up front, as opposed to going, okay, well, whenever you have the $1,250 or whatever, you have the $2,500, give me a call. So that way, at least, you know, you're getting the case on board, even if it's just a few hundred dollars or whatever it is, and you're starting to do work for that client. They feel like they're moving forward and they have a structured way to go about it. I mean, that's key.
Right. I mean, again, I try not to turn away money. and to the extent that the structure that I follow insulates me as an attorney from extraneous liability. So like you said, I accept those payments. I do work that can be done. It's billed accordingly. If they request a refund before the retainer is paid in full, we send them a billing statement and, you know, we reconcile the bills and things of that nature. But even at, say, $250 a week, A, that's $250 a week that you're not receiving or weren't receiving previously, and B, there's plenty of stuff that you could do that could bill that away quite easily that would be required for you to do anyway. So we do the doc prep up front, and even though it would be done, meaning that we've basically insulated ourselves from a refund request, we don't file it until that 1250 is in. You know what I mean? Same thing with making a general appearance and subbing in on their case. If your full retainer isn't paid to me, that's fine. But as part of that, we don't prepare your documents with my name on it. We prepare your documents pro per, and then we simply walk in with a sub or notice of limited scope at the point where the retainer is paid in full. So we have the scenario sometimes where they haven't quite paid the full amount. We've submitted their documents pro per because the courts will kick back a pre-existing case if you put your attorney information on it and don't have a sub filed, and we don't want to file our substitution of attorney without being paid. So we file that, those documents pro per, so that's accomplished the first half of it, and we'll walk in with a notice of limited scope the day of, and so it's not a full sub, but for that hearing, and then we allow them to finish up their payments or whatever the case may be. But there are steps that can be taken to protect the attorney from being on the hook full services without having your appropriate retainer being paid.
Yeah, and more has long to do with that pay-as-you-go, one step at a time, and you know, limiting the scope of the involvement, and then only doing the flat rates when you have cases in which there's a pretty clear time frame of the amount of appearances or whatever, you know it needs to take, it's going to take to get it done.
Right, and then another
so it's key, finding that balance and evaluating.
Right, and another key step in all of this is obviously get your credit card authorization and get the authority to run it at a specific point in time, each week, each 2 weeks, each month, whatever the case may be. But that way you're not chasing the client necessarily. You have a viable method of collecting from them, and once you get their authorization on file, then you just run it at the same time. And it's very rare that these payments don't go through. So, you know, we don't want to run into a scenario where it's just, you know, their word, get their credit card information and run that card.
Yeah, exactly. And is there a specific tool or merchant processor or law practice management software that you use that makes that, you know, a little more seamless, that card authorization and then those weekly or monthly payments, whatever the interval is for that client?
So interestingly enough, I'm still old school. I still have an old school card reader, and that's kind of funny that you brought up old school fundamentals to sales, because I'm very much steeped in that. I think, you know, there's room to grow from the fundamentals, but you need to have your fundamentals down pat before you can grow. So no, but I am exploring like PayLaw to try and make this a lot easier to just run those cards.
You mean LawPay?
Or LawPay, yeah, LawPay, to run those seamlessly. It's just something that was recently introduced to me actually a few months ago, and I haven't had a chance to sort of transition over to doing that just yet, but that's definitely something in my future, especially with the way that things have been going lately, because again, by following this step-by-step process, by getting these credit card authorizations, by then being able to have them make these payments regularly, it just seems like a much better process where I don't even have to think about it, because right now it's basically my secretary running the cards at the appropriate times, and we have tasks, right, at scheduled times to make these credit card payments.
Yep.
But if it could become automated, which I'm told it can be, then that's the natural next step of where I'm going.
Yeah, absolutely. LawPay has been a really powerful tool for a lot of our attorneys to be able to automate those, you know, every Friday 250 or every other Friday 250. You know, they code that in once, set the interval, set the amount, and set the period, and then it's done, and then it just processes. And it also can be, you know, well timed, so that when the person is getting a direct deposit on those same dates, it happens. So that's a little bit more likely to be able to go through. So it's a tool that cuts down on the admin, and also we found also increases the percentage of times that payment's going to go through as well.
Right, because I mean, human
error,
right?
Schedule.
I mean, someone might forget to run a payment or get too busy during your normal course of the day to run it, and then before you know it, the money was there, but it's gone because they're low income or whatever the case may be. And that's one of the reasons why I'm diligently exploring transitioning over and how quickly I can do that, because again, we want to get those payments in, and we want to make it seamless both for them and on the administrative side for us.
Yep, and be able to send them just a little link, you know, in their email, or take it over the phone and set that up. Yeah, so if you haven't seen it already, Tara, we'll send you the webinar that we did with LawPay a short time ago, and that, it kind of does it. They do a pretty good job of demoing the full app and so forth. So if you haven't seen that, I'll be happy to send it over to you.
Yeah, I've actually seen that, but if you could send it anyway, that way.
It's okay. Yeah, it has the links and everything you need to get that set up, and then they usually will integrate into most practice management software, so
right.
It becomes pretty easy. Okay, well, listen, Tara, this has been a lot of fun, like I said, it brings you back to the good old days and the good old fundamentals of just client communications, quality communication, rapport building, taking people from just a low impact to high impact, making it very easy for people to take those initial steps and not giving them too much financial resistance in the front end, having given you a chance to meet with them. I mean, these are just, you know, the fundamentals of the sale, you know, and, you know, again, a lot of lawyers don't like to see themselves as salespeople or making a sale, but you know, that a sale is happening one way or another. And so understanding these principles really makes a, you know, can really make a big difference in people's ability to feel comfortable working with you and also feeling comfortable to pull the trigger and retain you for your service. So I really appreciate all your insights from your extensive background in this field.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure. And even for me, saying a lot of these things out loud, you know, for a second there, I thought, I'm like, man, I'm doing some new and novel things with Unbundled and my lead generation. And then in talking with you and hearing it out loud, I'm like, no, actually, I'm just defaulting back to tried and true methods of the sale and again, rapport building and all that good stuff. So it was actually really refreshing to understand that actually what I'm doing is the fundamentals, because I'm a strong believer in the fundamentals to begin with.
And just slightly tailor fit to the people you're talking to and what makes the most sense for them. So I'm glad that this was a helpful refresher for yourself as well.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right, Tara. So with that, thanks again, Tara, for taking the time. And for everyone else that's been listening to the podcast, we certainly appreciate your participation. If you join the podcast, share it with any other attorneys you think might benefit. Jump on iTunes and share a review. We read every single one of them. We would love your feedback. And until next time, thanks so much for listening.
Thank you.
For more information about how our lead generation services can help you grow your practice, visit our website at www.unbundledattorney.com. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please be sure to subscribe so you get each new episode as soon as it's available, and leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Once again, thanks for listening.